impersonal, or at least they encourage an impersonal outlook. Then some parts of the Shruti, some parts of the four Vedas and their corollaries, some parts of the Smriti, in other words, some of the Puranas and so on, they just gently say that you can get liberation through devotional service. Some say it more strongly, and this is the case here. Some say it more strongly. So the scriptures which say it more strongly, they quietly agreed. They don't say it a lot more strongly, but a little more strongly. They quietly agreed. Then, some of the Maha Upanishads, some of the great Agamas, Vaishnav, Tantric instructional literatures, and others, and some other Puranas, which have their roots in the Shruti. Anyway, we don't want to get too technical, but it's very interesting. They became angry with the scriptures who quietly agreed. And they said, why don't you make this point more clearly? Make this point more clearly. That liberation is easily achieved by devotional service. You should say it. Don't just hint at it. You should say it and make it clear. With statements like this from the Vishnu Purana, Dharam arta kamai kim tasya muktis tasya karestita samasta jagatam mule yasya bhakti stira twai. If someone has firm devotion towards you, the root of all the worlds, then what is the value of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification to him? Liberation sits in the palm of his hand. So we have four groups of scriptures here, four categories. Those who are kind of impersonal, those who are saying that if, or those, let us say, impersonal, but those who are saying that the goal is liberation, those which are saying that liberation is more easily achieved by devotional service, those which are saying that liberation is much more easily achieved by devotional service, and those that are saying that liberation is just nothing. It's in the palm of the hand of someone who's rendering devotional service. So easy. Yes, then some very great scriptures acknowledged the discussion. They were the most confidential and rarely obtainable Upanishads, like the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, and there are others. They're Vaishnav. When I say Vaishnav, they are like full on strong Vaishnav scriptures. But they're Upanishads. What does that mean? It means they're part of the Shruti, part of the four Vedas, or connected with the four Vedas. Then certain great Vaishnav agamas, those Vaishnav instructional literatures, like Sattvata Siddhanta and a few of the Puranas, and the head of all these scriptures was Srimad Bhagavatam. They all sat there and smiled. That's what they did. They all sat there and smiled, but didn't say anything. Now you might think that why not? Seems like an important discussion to take part in. But they didn't say anything, they just smiled. So Sanatana Goswami explains, some of them were thinking, just see the power of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy, by which even the essential message of Scripture, which should be obvious, becomes incomprehensible, even to vastly learned authorities, like the Scriptures. Because the thing is, you know, the real point which we're going to come to is that none of these Scriptures have got the point. The point has got nothing to do with liberation. Anyway, that's going to come out when the devotional Scriptures preach to Gopa Kumar on their own, away from this debate which is going on. So then others of these great, the greatest Scriptures, were thinking in a scornful way, who are these Shastras daring to openly declare the confidential glory of bhakti that it bestows liberation? So they didn't appreciate it. So the second group considered the less advanced Scriptures unqualified to become involved in such a discussion, and they felt that this was the wrong format, that the whole thing that was going on was wrong, and therefore they didn't take part. So then, those agamas, you remember the agamas, who are really, you know, teaching how liberation is easily achieved through devotional service, and a few of their friends, they got really fired up, and there was a fierce debate between them and the more impersonal Scriptures. So the great Scriptures just left. They didn't even bother staying in that place. So when they left, all the other Scriptures sort of got a little taken aback. And then there was some attempt to resolve the matter, and it was felt, you know, that somehow the fact that the great Scriptures left had such an impact on the other Scriptures that they all agreed, all right, liberation, knowledge and liberation are easily achieved by devotional service, more so than by knowledge alone, as the agamas had originally said. The first agamas had originally said. So this pleased Gopa Kumar. In other words, Gopa Kumar is now feeling that if I want to get liberation, then I should do it through devotional service. As Lord Brahma, he is thinking in this way. However, then he remembered those great devotional Scriptures. He had noted their very deep, very grave smiles as they were listening to all these conjectures and different arguments being presented. And then he remembered how they left the debate in disgust. And he thought, they must have a higher idea. So he went to them and appealed to them, please come back. Please explain to me what is really the answer. So they came and they explained to Gopa Kumar. They said that sometimes, it's true, Sometimes we have to mention impersonal liberation. Just to contrast it with devotional service. Just to glorify devotional service as being far better than it. Sometimes we have to describe it, or mention it at least, mention it. Sometimes we have to mention it to encourage people to completely avoid it. But actually, you should know that the pleasure of devotional service is many millions of millions of times greater than that of liberation. Yes. They explained there's no positive pleasure in liberation. It's just a relief from pain, or it's just something like sleeping. It's nothing. It's not a positive experience. It's like nothing in particular. It's not positive. It's not negative. It's just kind of nowhere. And they said that it's not really liberation, because afterwards you'll take birth again. After some time you'll fall down. And they quoted 10, 2, 32, is it? Or Yen Ye Ravandakshava Muktamaninas. 10, 2, 32, is it? Or Yen Ye Ravandakshava Muktamaninas. Twayastabhavad Abhashuddha Buddhaya. Aruya Kritrena Parampadam Tata Patantyado Nadrata Yushmadangraya. That those people who become liberated, but Patantyada, they fall down again, because they have no attachment for the lotus feet of the Lord. So they said this word liberation is a misnomer. It's not the right name. It is not liberation. It is just a temporary cessation of suffering. It is not actual liberation as such. And they said that in terms of the activities of devotional service, this liberation is available even through namabhas, a quite undeveloped stage of chanting the holy names, nowhere near the pure stage. So but they said there is some value in it. It helps us understand that we are Brahman. We're not these bodies. We are Satchit Ananda. We are spirit. It helps us in that respect. But it doesn't give the proper understanding of who we are. That we are, along with those things, we are actually the eternal servants of Krishna. And he is the supreme Brahman. So therefore, we are one with and different from him. We are one with him in quality, but different from him in quantity. So the great scriptures said that therefore our philosophy is achintya bhed abhed tattva. We are spirit. We are Satchit Ananda. We are Brahman, but the Lord is Parabrahman, the supreme Brahman, far greater than us in quantity. So they went on like this to explain how devotional service is far better than liberation. Liberation is nothing. It's hardly even a secondary consideration. They said even demons attain it. Cow killers and killers of Brahmins attain it sometimes. So how can it be so great if people like that attain it?
Then they explained to Gopakumar that we have explained things to you in this way just to help people who are attached to liberation become attracted to devotional service. But actually there is far more that we could tell you. There's a lot more that we could tell you. But we just want you to understand this point. So Gopakumar agreed, yes, I will not worry about impersonal liberation. I'll just be a devotee. So they told him, you go, you chant your mantra, and go beyond this universe. If you want to see the Brahman in a personal form, go to Mahakalapur, beyond the universe, and see Lord Mahakala. He is the Brahman in a personal form. Yeah, so you can see. I mean, an interesting point here is that the prospect of Gopakumar becoming an impersonalist, you know, it was taken to be a big problem. So all these big scriptures came and they really kind of worked him over. They really preached to him in a big way to get him out of being an impersonalist. And they succeeded. He came back to being, or he came to the point of being a personalist. They told him, you try and go there, but if you're not satisfied there, go back to Vrindavan. Now he's still on Brahmaloka, and he was sitting there wondering what to do. But then the Lord came to him and told him, just go back to Vrindavan. Just go back there. And then from there, perhaps you can approach this Mahakalapur if you want to. So therefore the second chapter concludes with, oh, and the Lord told him, you'll see your guru again there. So go back. So the chapter concludes with Gopakumar about to go back to Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we're moving on to chapter 3 of part 2 of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We have 5 parts to go, 5 chapters to go. And we have 9 days, plus a 10th day where we'll have another test. So I thought that this week we would try to do chapters 3, 4, and 5. 3 chapters in 5 days, rather than a chapter a day, which is what we've been doing so far. These chapters are a little long, really, I think. So today we'll begin chapter 3 and we'll do most of chapter 3. We've written on the board here some headings of some of the natural divisions or natural sections in this third chapter. Well, first of all, Gopakumar is in Vrindavan, but then he goes to Mahakalapur, which we have written up there on the board. Mahakalapur is the abode of impersonal liberation. And there is a particular form of the Lord presiding there, who is, in fact we heard the other day, he is the impersonal Brahman, but in a personal form. Yes, so He's not so totally personal as Krishna himself in his two-handed form, or even Lord Narayan. Although he is a person, but the impersonal aspect is prominent in him. And we'll see how that comes out as we go through. Then, so Gopikumar goes there. From, of course, the material world, he goes through the coverings. We'll discuss how he goes through the coverings. He reaches Mahakalapur, meets Lord Mahakala. That is very interesting experience. And then he meets Lord Shiva. He's contemplating going back to Vrindavan, but while he's still there in Mahakalapur, he meets Lord Shiva, who is traveling on his way from Shivaloka to Mount Kailash. And they have some discussions. And then, as they're still there, actually, in Mahakalapur, this is all going on in Mahakalapur, but some inhabitants of Vrindavan pass through the Brahmajyoti, Mahakalapur, the impersonal aspect, or the impersonal region, you could say, just outside the coverings of the universe. So Lord Shiva explains a little bit about them, and then Gopikumar meets them, and they start preaching to him. There are two phases, really, to their preaching. One is they recommend that he perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And, in fact, particularly they actually recommend that he perform Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but with an emphasis on chanting. Actually, I should have put that there on the board. Yes, it's not just Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but it is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti with an emphasis on chanting. Anyway, the first part actually is about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And then the second part, they explain very clearly that chanting is the best process, the best of the nine processes. And amongst the different types of chanting, because you can chant about the pastimes of the Lord, the philosophy of the Lord, or the holy names of the Lord, or like this, they're different subject matters for chanting, but particularly the inhabitants of Vaikuntha explain that of all the different types of chanting or subject matters for chanting, the best is the holy names. And in fact, that takes us to the end of the third chapter, but today I'm proposing that we will get somewhere into the middle of the discussion between Gopikumar and the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Let us see how it goes. But I'm not really intending finishing the whole chapter today. So, Gopikumar, last week we left Gopikumar in Brahmaloka as Lord Brahma. So, but he heard the debate between the great scriptures, and well, initially, of course, somehow his interest in impersonalism became aroused, or some interest was implanted in his heart about impersonalism. So then he heard the debate, and he became basically convinced that if you want to become liberated, devotional service is the best way to achieve that. And then the greatest of the great scriptures preached to him that actually devotional service is an end in itself. It is not just a matter of it being the best way to achieve liberation, but it is the supreme goal, it is the supreme activity, the supreme means for advancement, and the supreme end, the supreme goal, to just become advanced in devotional service, and to become a pure devotee and lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Gopikumar, he became basically convinced, but still he had some desire, some interest at least, in understanding what is this liberation really. That was there. So he was instructed right at the end, then maybe you should go to Mahakalapur and see for yourself and get a little direct experience about liberation. So then he left Brahmaloka, and now at the beginning of chapter 3, Gopikumar is back in Vrindavan. Now he finds that because he's been in Brahmaloka for some time, he's been Lord Brahma for some time, so when he comes back to Earth, he finds Earth has changed due to the passage of time. He has not changed. He remains exactly the same cowherd boy, Gopikumar, young cowherd boy. He has not changed. But in general, the planet Earth has changed because a lot of time has passed. He's been there, well, for many days of Brahma, as Lord Brahma. So things have changed, but he comes back to Earth, he sees that, but then he goes to Vrindavan, and he finds that Sri Vrindavan Dham has not changed. He must have very transcendental vision. I mean, at least some transcendental vision. Even though he's not perfect, he's not reached the goal, at least, that he is moving towards and being moved towards, in fact, by his guru and by the Lord. But still he's fairly advanced, so he sees Vrindavan Dham as having not changed. I guess he didn't see all the houses which are coming up around Vrindavan town, and the new cars and the billboards and whatnot, the factories out on the main road. I guess he didn't notice them. That's why I'm assuming he has somewhat transcendental vision, because on a certain level, Vrindavan Dham is reflecting the change which is going on in the external world pretty much as much, at least, you know, to some extent, considerable extent. But Gopikumar, his consciousness and his perception of things was such, he didn't see any change. He saw no change, in fact, in Vrindavan. So the Lord had encouraged him, go to Vrindavan and move around, visit the places and like that. So he did that, and the Lord told him that you will meet your guru again. And sure enough, he meets his spiritual master for the third time. And as in all the other meetings, his spiritual master is completely absorbed, totally overwhelmed by symptoms of love of God. And in fact, he is just lying unconscious in a devotional trance. And very esoteric and extremely elevated state of pure love of God. So Gopikumar, finding his spiritual master in this very glorious transcendental condition, he tries to revive him by different means, sprinkling water on him and picking him up and speaking to him. And eventually, through sprinkling him with water and various other means, he brings his spiritual master back to external consciousness. So,